You're invited to swing and sway and clap and dance, as Chris has said. And we really mean it. It's a good opportunity to get your aerobic activity in and attend worship.
Looked out
You have everything, said the potted plant that happened to be looking out of the same window. Jenny nibbled a leaf. You have two windows, said the plant. I have only one. Jenny sighed and bit off another leaf. The plant continued. Two pillows, two bowls, a red wool sweater, eye drops, ear drops, two different bottles of pills, a thermometer, and he even loves you. That is true, said Jenny, chewing more leaves. You have everything, repeated the plant. Jenny nodded, her mouth full of leaves. Then why are you leaving? Because, said Jenny, snapping off the stem and blossom, I am discontented. I want something I do not have. There must be more to life than having everything.
Staggering post
post film life. It has ranked number one in the United States, the United Kingdom, Canada, Ireland, New Zealand, and 19 other countries. The official song video features people of all sizes and shapes, of all ages and races and abilities, all dancing in different settings, dancing with abandon, even in public, in broad daylight, with other people watching, which is totally unthinkable for Unitarian Universalists, I know. But it's true, that is what happens in the video. I first heard the song in the film, of course, and since then, Nathaniel, my 10-year-old, now 10-year-old son, has listened to it repeatedly. He had to have it on a CD that we listened to last summer, which pretty much has like holes in it now from being listened to so many times. And he has sung it, and he has sounded out parts of it on his trombone. I cannot get away from it. I have heard it everywhere, at the gym blasting from the aerobic studio, from the spinning room, it's even louder. I guess spinning makes lots of noise, and the music has to be that much louder. I hear it at Nathaniel's elementary school, and at summer camp last summer and this summer. It's in stores, it's everywhere. It's used on TV shows and in amateur videos like the one made by the staff at the Fort Washington Public Library, which my librarian husband shared with me, and I commend to you. You need to check out YouTube and look for the Fort Washington Public Library's video. And there's even a 24-hour video to accompany the song Happy. For 24 straight hours, you can watch different people dance, like random folks picked up off the street, dancing to the song Happy. Now, that's a little weird. That's a little weird, 24 hours of video of strangers dancing. I told my husband about that, and he said, well, don't you think it's weird that you watched a whole lot of it? I had to say, yeah, I guess you're right. Though the song really does have the ability to make you feel happy or happier, I find its popularity really remarkable and worthy of note. In our deeply, deeply troubled world, with strife of all kinds around the globe, and in a vast sea of TV shows and films and books about aliens and zombies and vampires and viruses that wipe out the global population, the fact that Happy is the song that people of all ages want to hear tells us something about how we are feeling and what we need. Like Maury Sendak's Jenny, who is a little dog, if you hadn't figured that out, we are discontent with what is. We know that there is something that we don't have. We know that there is so much more to life, so much more. As I was listening to this Brandi Carlile song, which you all just played a little bit ago, I was thinking that we could hear in it the reflection and questioning of a person who has had their heart broken by a now gone lover. Oh Lord, what can I say? I'm so sad since you went away. Time, time ticking on me. Alone is the last place I wanted to be. The music world is full to overflowing with love songs. Songs about love sought, love enjoyed, love lost. So this could be one of countless love songs. Or we could experience Brandi Carlile's song as an expression of a deeper loneliness, a sense of isolation, a feeling of alienation from one's understanding of God or that which gives us life and makes one feel connected to all the creation. We could hear it as an existential yearning. As easily as it reflects a romantic love gone wrong, It also reflects an emotional and spiritual place where it feels like the walls are closing in, where we feel all alone, where it feels like something's just missing inside. When we are brokenhearted by a lost love, when we have had a traumatic experience, like our congregation having a fire, when we have lost connection with that which grounds us and gives us life, the numinous, the holy, the spirit of life, we are left off center, out of balance, and lost to ourselves and our former knowing of ourselves and our identity. We are deeply, meaningfully unhappy. How then can we find what we don't have? How can we right ourselves then? How do we get happy? Not that momentary giddiness, but a steady state that helps us to navigate the inevitable ups and downs of life. How do we fill that place inside where it feels like something's just missing? Well, for good or for ill, there is no shortage of advice on how to achieve happiness. For many years, Charles Schulz alone gave us lots and lots of ideas about sources of happiness in his Peanuts cartoons. Happiness is a warm puppy. Happiness is a warm blanket. Happiness is a warm hug. Happiness is anyone and anything that's loved by you. These days, there are lots of books and blogs and TED Talks and slogans, each with something to say to us. But if we have lived long enough and with some measure of introspection, there are some things we already know about happiness. We know that we can never be happy living someone else's life, living according to the standards of others. We know we have to be true to who we are. We have learned the damaging effects of comparing our very real lives to the images of lives portrayed in print and films. You know, those folks in print and films, they always have better writers. They've got better clothes. Their carefully crafted dialogue is so right on. They always know just what to say. Our lives are sloppier, messier. Our outfits less well put together, and they never fit quite as well as they do in the movies. And we're coming to understand that social media like Facebook creates for many of us a feeling of dissatisfaction with life. Other people's posts look so much more interesting. They've been on vacation, they've been eating good food, they're having a good time, and we're home slogging through work and school. Their lives look exotic and interesting, and their little remarks are witty. Their pictures are gorgeous. Like, man, that's so Photoshopped, it's fabulous. We tally our friends and our number of likes, even if we're trying not to. You can't help but look to see how many friends do they have. Are they really friends with all those people? You're really friends. Okay. Mike DeMeo has a lot of friends on Facebook, and he says he's friends with all of them. You will all friend him later, I hope. Yeah, I believe you. And many in our communities have learned the hard way that happiness doesn't come through alcohol or drugs, and that food and sex cannot fill the need for love. There is an understanding that substitutes just won't work. They won't fill the space within our hearts. So how then do we find our inner warm puppy? How do we find our hug? How do we find our happiness? In preparing for this morning's service, I found a thread that runs through all that I've read on the topic of happiness. Though there are lots of tips and suggestions, some of which are wise and truly worthy of taking to heart, there is a steady thread that runs through all of them, and that is gratitude. Gratitude creates in us an openness to life which paves the way for happiness. According to the social scientist Sean Baker, who has spent the last 12 years at Harvard studying what makes people happy, you can actually have a job doing that. I find that fascinating. But he is chasing down his bliss, studying what makes people happy. And he asserts that gratitude is the foundation of happiness. Before we can ever begin to be happy, we have to learn to appreciate the good that is within our lives, and in the world around us, which can be so hard to see. In his work, he insists that happiness is the precursor to success, by the way, challenges the notion that success leads us to happiness. He writes, "Happiness is not a mystery. There's no magic here. You have to train your brain to be positive, just like you work out your body. We need to work daily at being happy." As part of that work, Egor suggests that every day, when you wake up, you should write down three things that you are grateful for that have occurred over the past 24 hours, three things for which you give thanks. He says that this practice of tuning into what is good in your life helps you to learn to scan the world. Everything you see and read and hear helps you scan the world for what's good and helps you to develop a practice of optimism. Focusing on what you give thanks for can lead you to the happiness that you hope to find. Another author, Brian McLaren, picks up on this thread and links gratitude to spiritual growth. And he writes that gratitude may be the greatest secret to happiness that there is. But, he goes on to say, there are mighty, powerful industries designed entirely to keep you from ever feeling grateful. There are a lot of people who spend a lot of money to get you to think about what other people have so that you will want more. That you will look out of your window, your two windows, and say, it is not enough. They want you to think more about what you don't have than what you do have, so that you'll want more. And if you want more, you will buy more from them. Spirituality is, and always has been, under the assault of consumerism. And so it's the feeling that there's never enough that robs the soul of happiness, that it's never good enough, that we never have enough. There are never enough members of any congregation. The building is never quite right. We can't host all the events that we might like to. The parking lot stinks. The sign stinks. We're going to use one of the language there. We're not going to do it. You know, it is never enough. I think you know what I'm talking about. Gratitude is that hard work, that spiritual practice of waking up to the gifts in your life. It's the practice of seeing the abundance in life, in the forces at work in nature and in humankind, and paying attention to the good that we already experience and have in our lives. Happiness comes from our gratitude. I share with you a short story adapted from the Sufi tradition. A woman came upon a frowning man walking along the road to town. "What's wrong?" she asked. "Are you all right?" The man held up his small and tattered bag and moaned, "All that I own in this whole world barely fits in this miserable, wretched sack." The woman looked at it. "That's too bad," she said. And with that, she snatched it from his hands and she ran off down the road with his miserable little sack. Having lost everything, the man burst into tears and he threw himself upon the ground and moaned for the longest time. More miserable than ever, he finally dragged himself to his feet and went on along the road. Meanwhile, the woman had run down the road and around a bend and placed that miserable little sack in the center of the road where he would have to come upon it. When the man finally did come down the road and saw his little bag sitting in the road before him, he ran to it and laughed with joy and shouted, my sack, my wonderful sack. I thought I had lost you forever. begins with gratitude. Gratitude for what we do have. Chris, I invite you to come forward now and lead the gathering in the offering.
We support the work of this congregation in many ways, through work of our hands, the dedication of time, and the contribution of our pockets. But I want to stay with our hands for a moment. First of all, the fellowship committee. Twice within 2 weeks, you've prepared for us a wonderful after-service party and picnic. Thank you.
So we still have a lot of work to do, and let's understand the gratitude we have as this congregation for everything we have, and let's really get happy that the baskets will now go around. I invite you to join with me now in taking a deep breath to center down, to reflect on those things that have been shared. We know that candles have been lit this morning for particular joys and concerns, both the deeply personal, those for people we love, and for the larger world. But there is so much more that we carry in our hearts, so much more than we articulate and share with each other. So I invite you to just be present here now in this prayerful space. Spirit of life and love, I give thanks for the presence of these good folks on this Sunday, folks who've come a long way or a short way, though they may not know it. This service would not be the same if they were not here. Every single person in this sanctuary brings something special, brings their unique presence, and it's a gift to the rest of us. So, Spirit of Creation, I call upon you to be with them in whatever way they know you. Touch them in whatever way you do. speak to their hearts in the way that they hear. Help them to know that they are appreciated, that we are grateful for their presence. As we reflect today on gratitude and happiness, we know that there are some obstacles to happiness that the power of positive thinking cannot begin to remove. And so let us be gentle with ourselves and each other when we find ourselves in the uncomfortable place where happiness is elusive, even when we are diligent in our practice of gratitude. In those times, may we appreciate the benefits of this age of pharmacology and the availability of good food and the powers of rest and exercise and the love of many, and maybe the love of one above the rest. Today, may we spend time focusing our energy on those things that we have experienced in the last 24 hours are going way back, for which we are grateful. And may that gratitude inspire and bless us. For these hopes and for those that are held in the silent sanctuary of each heart, I say so may it be, and amen. I share with you a story from Paulo Coelho's book, The Alchemist. A certain shopkeeper sent his son to learn about the secret of happiness from the wisest man in the world. The young man, the son, wandered through the desert for 40 days and 40 nights, as always happens in a good story. Finally, he came upon a beautiful castle high atop a mountain, and it was there that the wise man lived. Rather than finding a saintly man, though, this young man, upon entering the rooms of this castle, saw a hive of activity. Tradesmen came and went, and people were conversing in the corners, and a small orchestra was playing soft music, and there was a table covered with food, not unlike that over here on this wall. Platters of food from all over the world. The wise man conversed with everyone, and the young man had to wait for 2 hours before it was his turn to be given the older man's attention. The wise man listened attentively to the young man's explanation of why he'd come, but told him that he didn't have time just then to explain the secret of happiness. He suggested that the younger man look around the palace and return in a couple of hours. Meanwhile, though, while you're doing that, I want to ask you to do something, said the wise man, handing the younger man a teaspoon that he then put 2 drops of oil in. As you wander around, carry with you this spoon, but don't spill the oil, okay? Talk to you later. And off he went. The young man began climbing and descending the many stairways of the palace, keeping his eyes fixed on that spoon. And after a couple of hours, or so he guessed because he was afraid to look at a clock, he returned to the room where the wise man was. Well, asked the wise man, did you see the tapestries that are hanging along the walls of the dining hall? Did you see the garden that it took master gardeners years to create? Did you notice the beautiful volumes in my library? Is it not something to behold? The young man was terribly embarrassed, and he confessed that he had observed nothing. His only concern had been to not spill the oil that the wise man had put into that spoon. Well, then go back and observe the marvels of my world, said the wise man. You cannot trust a man if you don't know his house. And the wise man handed the young man the spoon again, put in 2 more drops of oil, and sent him off. The young man returned to his exploration of the palace and this time observed all of the works of art on the ceiling and the walls. He saw the gardens and he saw the mountains out beyond. He saw the beauty of the flowers. flowers, and he tasted the food. He marveled at everything and at the taste with which it had all been selected and carefully placed. After a while, he returned to the wise man, and he relayed in detail everything he had seen. And the wise man said, "But where are the drops of oil that I entrusted to you?" And the young man looked down and saw that the oil was indeed gone. "Well," said the wise man, "there is only one piece of advice I can give you. The secret of happiness is to see all of the marvels of the world and never forget the drops of oil in the spoon." So what are those drops of oil? I imagine that they might be the unique elements of our individual lives, our commitments, our covenants, the people and the pets and those we love most dearly, the work that's ours to do in this world, the responsibility that are ours alone, the private desires and deepest yearnings of our hearts, our experiences and difficulty which have had a shaping effect upon our lives. Maybe those are the drops of oil that we are charged with carrying carefully while we take in the wonders of the world around us. Maybe it is with gratitude for these things that we find the quality of life that is called happiness. Would you rise as you are comfortable and join in singing a familiar hymn, "For All That Is Our Life," which is printed in your order of service. Without
have an incomplete picture.
Whatever comes our way in the days ahead, may we welcome it as part of the varied and colorful mosaic that is, bit by bit, piece by piece, taking shape and is, in every moment, our one wild and precious life. So may it be. Would you snuff out our chalice for us? I invite you to rise as you're comfortable and join in this closing song, known to some of you better than others, perhaps.
Thank you.